100 Royal Flush Toilet Rentals.
Roland Birdies is a premium mobile golf simulator experience, perfect for weddings, birthdays, corporate events, backyard parties, and more. Whether you're a scratch golfer or just the king of the putt-putt course, we deliver fun, high-tech entertainment straight to your event. Rain or shine, indoors or outdoors, Roland Birdies brings the course to you. Book your event today at RolandBirdiesGolf.com. That's RolandBirdiesGolf.com. Roland Birdies Mobile Golf Simulator. Premium golf, anywhere you are.
Cold weather is just around the corner. Be ready for Old Man Winter by shopping the Craft Stove Store and Patio for all your fireplace needs. Shop over 20 models of vented and vent-free propane or natural gas logs that heat for just pennies an hour and use no electricity, keeping you warm and cozy even during a power failure. Shop and save now at the Craft Stove Store and Patio for everything your hearth desires. 3002 Wade Hampton Boulevard.
Craft Stove Store and Patio.
When reliability matters, trust American Doormasters. Is your garage door opener broken? One of the most common issues we handle is garage doors that suddenly stop working. At American Doormasters, we diagnose and fix problems like broken springs, offering professional service at a great price. Serving the upstate of South Carolina, we provide top quality garage door installation and repair. Whatever your needs, call American Doormasters today at 864-990-3075 for prompt and professional service.
When you wake up well-rested on a great mattress, everything becomes clear.
I do have a favorite child.
Things you missed when you were tired finally reveal themselves.
I should have just said the baby was cute.
It's the actually really seriously best sale of the year for real at Mattress Firm. Get a king bed for a queen price. Save up to $700 on Sealy and get a free adjustable base, plus fast free delivery. The right mattress matters. We'll find yours. Restrictions apply. See store or mattressfirm.com for details.
Do you need to reboot your style? If your work boots kick the bucket, then get to Harrison. We're the boot capital of the world with more in-stock boots than anyone. Work boots, western boots, hiking boots, rain boots, and plenty of wow boots. Job site, rodeo, tailgate, honky-tonk, Harrison's has boots for all walks of life. But if you need to put your best foot forward, stop by Harrison, the home of work, western, and wow! Come see us in Malden and Spartanburg or shop online at harrisonsusa.com. Boots you're after, Harrison's has them.
Discover the value of convenience with golf cart service, proudly serving Spartanburg and the upstate of South Carolina. Whether you're looking to rent, lease, or buy, we have industry-leading club car vehicles for every need. Our mobile service truck brings maintenance directly to you, ensuring stress-free service. Plus, with our simple financing options, owning a club cart has never been easier. Visit our website, golfcartsc.com, or call 864-574-4616 to explore our inventory and learn more.
You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John. Now let's get back to the show.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Faxon Childress and John Hite continues right here on 105.5 97.5 The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. We're going to talk more Clemson football here on the program. I want to take not really a victory lap because I think that would be stupid. I hope that everybody can kind of understand and see why I was so annoying and incessantly banging the drum for 87 to get the football. This has been the best tight end on the team for 2 years, in my opinion, and nothing I've seen showcased on the football field has changed that opinion. Like I have an unwavering belief that Christian Bentancur is going to be the best tight end in the history of this program if they just give him the ball. That is literally all you have to do is just give 87 the ball. We had a ton of texts in the first segment of the program on Bentancur. I wanted to save it a little bit for the second hour of the program because Texter gets in and says they need to feed 87 more to open up the outside. He's got good hands. He runs a good route. He's got some speed, and his blocking has gotten better too, Jeff and Manning. Jeff, I am so glad you mentioned this specifically. Bentancur has gotten so much better as a blocker, and I think that's part of why you're starting to see the snap share increase. Like, Sweeney tells a lot of truth in his press conferences when it comes to why guys aren't on the field. I asked about tight end every week for the first 4 weeks of the season, and to be honest with y'all, Coach Sweeney never really gave me an answer that I was searching for, but when I went back and I listened to the answers, there are some nuggets in there as to why he wasn't seeing more playing time. They weren't pleased with the way that he was blocking and limited snaps. You want to know what Bentancur did in this game? He blocked his freaking tail off,
yes,
and he played the most snaps he's played all season. So If Ben Tanker continues to block, I think you're going to see him more incorporated in the offense, and I think there's a direct correlation there. And I think Coach Sweeney was being truthful with his assessment of this tight end room, but Ben Tanker is the best guy you've got. I think that's clear and obvious to everybody right now, and he can be a game changer. He's just got to continue to learn and grow as a redshirt freshman, and he's got to continue to block at a high level so he has that trust from the coaching staff.
Give it time. I'd be curious to see now with a game like this under his belt what the snap share is at the beginning of November. I give it some time. I think it will all come to fruition. I don't think those types of snap share changes happen overnight. As much as we all may agree or disagree with how Coach Sweeney does things, it's going to take a little bit of time, and I think I'm okay with that because I would rather slowly bring a player along than feed them way too much and it just bog them down and they hit a wall.
Yes.
I am totally okay, especially with the opponents that you have the next 2 weeks. Now, SMU is certainly the best of the three you'll play in this grouping here. But they're much better on the offensive side than the defensive side of the ball. So I think you have an opportunity to increase his snap share, increase the responsibilities given to him, so it's not just everything all at once.
Agreed. And I think that that's what this year is for.
In order
too,
for
right?
him to be, to what you're saying, to have the chance to be the best tight end to be here. I'm not there yet. I've seen, you know, Dwayne Allen. I saw Jordan Leggett. Michael Palmer was a darn good tight end here in Tigertown. You know, we have seen obviously Benny Cunningham, like Dwight Clark. We can go back in history. There's a lot of great tight ends in the history of this university.
There are.
Does he have the physical God-given ability to eventually become that? Yes, he does. But I think it's going to take some time.
He needs time. He needs seasoning. Is the crock pot, is that applicable here? He needs some more time in the crock pot.
I think you need some more. You need more reps. Like, I need to see more before I'm there. But in terms of, like, really, like, making his introduction to Clemson fans, that was about as good as he could have done on Saturday afternoon in Chapel Hill.
Indeed. Texter says, Ben Tanker runs like a running back with the ball in his hands, body with a tight end. Dude is quick. Yeah, that's part of the reason I've been so high on him for the last couple years is just the yak ability. And I think we also saw that against LSU, right? It was the last drive of the game. Clemson's trying to go down and get some points to end up tying it against the LSU Tigers or trying to take the lead, rather. And Ben Tanker caught one over the middle for his first collegiate catch and just completely skiff-armed a dude into the pavement. Completely just shoved his head into the ground. It was awesome. But yeah, Ben Tanker's got the physical tools. Clearly, he's got three more years of eligibility after this one, and I think that John's points are valid about development and getting him a little bit more comfortable and getting him up to speed, but that kid's got natural ability that we have not seen at this position in a long time at this university, and now it's just about putting him in positions to succeed and utilizing that ability that he has to be a really good player. Texter saying, baby Brock Bowers.
We're done with that. We're done with that here. After Faxon's term over the summer went viral, and after seeing 6 of 11 for 39 yards.
Can't even make jokes nowadays, man.
No.
Can't even make jokes nowadays. Coach Sweeney called him Baby Gronk. That's not me. Coach Sweeney stole the gimmick in the postgame press conference from me.
Well, how dare he? 6'5", 4" roar if you want to also get mad about that, about what Coach Sweeney said.
Crazy. Let's get Don in here on the phone lines. Don, before I let you talk, thank you so much for coming out to the event at Trammell and Mills, and thank April again on my behalf for sharing her testimony and her story. That was very appreciated and really touched a lot of our listeners, and definitely was a great thing and a great addition to the program. So thank you so much for that.
Hey, man, thank you all for the wonderful job that you all do. Man, you guys have been a great addition to the lineup. I got a chance to talk with John pretty extensively, and, you know, of course you guys can definitely identify with the whole breast cancer awareness, you know, in terms of, you know, your mother's going through that, through, you know, some of those different trials. And so thank you guys for offering that platform. And then again, thank you for the excellent job that you do talking Clemson football and all other things. So with that being said, man, y'all are right up my alley. Speaking of the tight ends, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. I do think Bentiker is going to be a star, not just off yesterday, but just off his makeup, and he seems to be made of the right stuff. But I also saw Olsen Pat Henry flash as a blocker. I mean, man, very physical on a couple plays that I was able to kind of, you know, watch. I'll rewatch it probably tonight once it comes on YouTube. But man, I've been pleased with him during the course of the year. You know, he still has some consistency issues. He's not a big guy. But, man, he's physical, and he's athletic enough to get to, you know, some of those blocks and finish. But The tight ends, if they can continue to just, you know, emerge as blockers, I do think the pass-catching ability is there for all of them. And so I look forward to seeing the growth from that tight end room.
I'm definitely excited about the tight ends, man. And for me personally, Don, like, I think this is the most underutilized room in the country, arguably, is what Clemson has a tight end. I don't think people realize how good Bentancur and OPH are as a duo. And then you throw a guy like Sapp that's got a really athletic profile in there as well. And I'll just go ahead and tell you right now, too, I think the second best tight end on this football team right now isn't even currently playing. I said this last year. I said I thought Bentancur should be tight end one and they should just let it rip. Logan Brooking, I know that everybody's heard Coach Sweeney talk about him. Yes. Yes, everything you've heard about Logan Brooking is the truth, and then some. Next year, the tight end room of Bentancur, Brooking, and OPH is a trio, and then throwing Sapp, if he's still here, into that as well. Like, Clemson needs to find a way to get these guys the ball more, Don. It's my biggest takeaway every time we see these tight ends, is they need the ball more. OPH needs the ball more. Bentancur needs the ball more, and I really hope that Coach Riley and his staff on the offensive side of the ball can continue to incorporate those tight ends, because it feels like every time they touch the ball, Don, something's good is happening with the football for the Tigers.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then my second point, and I'll take this off the air, I don't want to be one of those whiny fans who's looking to complain about something, but man, I'm glad that was truly a get right game for us. But man, I just wish we could have, you know, seen us establish the run, you know, because I did like the rotation of the backs a little bit more, but I would have liked to see us establish, you know, a run game a little bit more in that game. And I'll take it off the air and get your thoughts. Thank you guys again.
Appreciate you. Thanks for getting in with us, Don. 654 Roar is the number. And here's a couple of things that I have to say about the run game, because it wasn't a good game for the Clemson run game. Obviously, it's the worst game we've seen from Adam Randall since the LSU game. Gideon Davidson was not very impressive, to be candid. And neither was David Ezeamume. You only ran the ball 31 times for 89 yards as a team for 2.9 yards a carry. Here's why I'm going to tell you I'm not super concerned about this. What is Bill Belichick's entire identity as a defensive football coach? And the same has been passed on to Steve.
I don't know what Steve wants to do, to be fair. I have now several games of data. I have no clue what Steve Belichick is trying to do. I think, in theory, they would like to stop the run.
They'd like to stop the run. They were loading the box up.
Yeah, I'm not – I don't have a negative – I understand where Don's coming from in terms of, like, a little bit of pause with the rushing attack is, yeah, you'd like to see it go off a little bit more. But then again, when the passing game was clicking the way that it was – I think you needed the feel-good confidence that was coming from it. You were hitting explosives. You know, now, if we get to the end of this month and the rushing attack is still pretty similar to this, I'm going to have a lot of concerns. But I think in this one-off game, as we saw against a better team than North Carolina a couple weeks ago, Adam Randall was getting 9 yards a pop. Like, I do believe that the running game is there. I actually liked what I saw from Gideon Davidson. I think it showed, one, a lot of promise, that you can see a lot of athleticism with the young man, but also a lot of validation to what Coach Sweeney's been telling us, that everyone's been saying that he's lying to the fans, that he's not playing him, that he's not ready. I think this game was a great representation of what Coach Sweeney has been talking about at his press conferences and media availability this season when discussing the backups. Some of them are not ready, and that's okay. Like, these are young players we're talking about. You know, Ezeamume is a redshirt freshman. Gideon Davidson is a true freshman. Like, it's historically, like, at the running back position, it takes a little bit of time. But I saw some promise with these guys here. I think you have three very good backs. And honestly, I think Keith Adams Jr., is he the most athletic in the room? No, far from it. But my goodness, does he run the ball with a tenacity. He's intense when he carries the football. I think you still have something here. I think the offensive line is a continuing work in progress. So therefore, that's also going to hinder what the running game could be on a game-in and game-out basis. But I like what I saw here. Like, statistically, yeah, it doesn't wow you. The box score is not impressive. But I thought on, you know, individual plays and stuff from the, like, what I didn't need to see a lot from Adam Randall in this game, because I know what Adam Randall can do running the football. He showed you a lot of catching the ball out of the backfield, something I think this offense can really grow with moving forward. But out of the from Davidson and from Ezeamume, I saw something there.
Yeah.
Like, and it doesn't have to be the most dynamic performance on the stat sheet. to feel good about what they put on the field and what they put on tape Saturday.
Some texters are getting in on Keith Adams Jr. I did find that he was very impressive in this one in limited action. He's got that innate ability to just run hard and fall forward. And
He's not a 10 to 12 carry a game guy, but I still think there's a room. If you're able to keep extending drives and you can get the total play count up into the high 60s into the 70s and not in the low to mid 50s like you were doing in some of those losses earlier this year, you can have some of those opportunities. But this is also a product of your, on first down, you were being productive. On second down, you were being productive. Therefore, drives continue, and you got to run a bunch of stuff.
So I've been doing some deep diving on data this past week, and I've got a lot of just kind of takeaways of what I've uncovered. So we've got Cade Klubnik's stats when kept clean and under pressure so far this season. And last year, I think what part of what made Cade really good was that he was really good under pressure. Like, that was something where we saw an exponential growth in his game. Cade Klubnik's been one of the best quarterbacks in the country when kept clean this season. And there is a 21.3% completion percentage drop-off when Cade Klubnik is clean versus when Cade Klubnik is pressured. When he is clean so far this season, he is 82 for 115 for 756 yards, 5 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. Only one of those is a turnover-worthy play, so which means that the credit is being given to the receiver or something else on the play for him throwing that second interception. Under pressure, John, he's 29 of 58 this season. 50% completion percentage. Still those 5 touchdowns and 2 picks, but 3 turnover-worthy plays, and his turnover-worthy play percentage triples when under pressure. So, again, I think this starts up front for the Tigers. Like, Cade has been very lackluster at times this season. We are starting to see a more confident and comfortable Cade come out, and I think that North Carolina was a big step in the right direction. But for this offense, success directly coincides with keeping the quarterback clean. When the quarterback is clean, he's completing 72% of his passes, and he only has 1 turnover-worthy play all season. That is 0.8 percentage of the plays and snaps that Cade Klubnik has been kept clean. He has put the ball in jeopardy at a risk of a turnover. It's right in front of your eyes as to what the success is for this offense. You keep your quarterback clean, or you keep him clean enough, you have a good football team and you have good offense. If you let him get pressured, that's where some of those bad habits have started to creep in and revert with the footwork and the bailing, and that's where that trust that we talk about gets fractured. So I really like what I saw from Cade Klubnik this past weekend. I still think there's room to grow, and I still think that one of those incompletions that he had probably could slash should have been an interception. So, right, there's things to coach and there's things to grow with. But if the offensive line can just keep him upright for long enough, nobody else on Clemson's schedule should give this team problems with putting up points. Now, that's a much easier thing said than done, and you still have to go out there and execute, and you still have to go out there and play the football games. But, like, BC, who we'll preview this week, just took it on the chin 48-0 to Pittsburgh.
They
got in at the end?
They got in at the end.
Oh, okay. Lagerin, I guess, or maybe even the backup got him in at the end. But they were.
I don't know who scored it, but they got a touchdown.
They were down 48-0 at one point in that game. I guess they ended up getting a 7 to make it a stat pad, little effort there at the end. But that's not a good football team that Clemson's playing next week. It's not a good football team. And you want to talk about get-right spots. If last week was the get-right spot, you need to continue right this week. I don't even think that's a term in the football world, but you need to parlay that and build momentum this upcoming week against Boston College. And again, it's going to be a really advantageous opponent for Cade to feast and the offensive line to continue to try and progress. We're going to take a quick break here on the program. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. We're coming to Skip on the other side right after this.
At Toyota of Easley, it's the Clear the Lot sales event going on now. All 2025 models must go before the 2026 models arrive. Now is the time to get your best deal with great rates and discounts on all remaining 2025 Toyota Camrys, Corollas, or RAV4s. Hurry in to get the best selection of colors and amenities. Visit toyotaofeasley.com and pick out the vehicle you want. Then call to make an appointment or visit us at 5643 Calhoun Memorial Highway and experience exceptional customer service for your new ride home.
Your food is best when you know where it comes from. AMPM Farms offers beef raised here in the upstate, along with 70 vendors featuring raw milk, farm and dairy products, and more. Weekly wild game and burger flights, AMPM Farms is providing your family the very best. Plan your next meal, cookout, or tailgate with AMPM Farms. 1907 Lawrence Road in Greenville and Travelers Rest, 164 South Main in Fountain Inn, 3085 Allen Bridge Road. Online, ampmfarmsbutcheryandmarket.com.
Steve and Jerry here from the world-famous Beacon Drive-In in Spartanburg. Jerry, the Beacon opened back in 1946. How many years have we been serving great food at great prices?
Hey, Plante!
70 years. How many folks are we still serving every week?
Hey, Plante!
Well, like you always say, I like my job, but I love my customers. But can you say something other than hey, Plante?
Call it!
Join Steve
and Jerry
at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In, John White Boulevard in Spartanburg, where the food is still always good since 1946.
The South Carolina Education Lottery definitely allowed me to really find myself, to get an education, and then use it as a springboard in really launching my career. That's what the Life Scholarship did for me.
Knowing that I can go to where I want to go to, study what I want to study, having the Life Scholarship made that possible for me.
The South Carolina Education Lottery. A better you, a better us, a better South Carolina. Visit sceducationlottery.com/betteryou.
Looking to refresh your home without breaking the bank? At Linden Floors, we've got you covered, literally. We're a local, family-owned business that's been bringing beauty and durability to homes across the upstate. Right now, grab our luxury vinyl flooring for just $1.99 a square foot. Yep, you heard that right. Whether you're remodeling or just sprucing things up, trust the team that treats you like family, Linden Floors. Call us at 864-494-4317 or stop by today at 101 Chester Street, Spartanburg, and step into something better. Linden Floors, where design meets durability.
Is your crawl space damp or musty? Water in your crawl space can cause wood to rot and create an environment for mold and mildew that can make its way inside your home. Canty Foundation Specialist specializes in crawl space repair. Call us today for your free inspection so you can have the peace of mind knowing your crawl space is dry and your home is protected. Call today, 864-641-0176. Or visit CantyCanFixIt.com.
We are here with Eric Snyder of Snyder Tree Care. Eric, you guys can help a lot as far as preparing for those winter storms.
You know, winds come and storms happen, but if your tree is properly pruned, it's not going to fall to the storm like one that isn't. We would recommend that you prune it properly so the wind can get through it. Your tree can be healthy and strong. We don't want to top them out. If you top a tree, you're going to have a bigger problem in 3 to 5 years. You can find us on the web at SchneiderTree.com.
Leave it to Snyder Tree Care.
Collecting sports and Pokemon cards is bigger than ever, and there's no better place to buy or sell than Jimmy's Cards and Collectibles in Anderson. Jimmy's Cards and Collectibles invite you to buy or sell your favorite sports and collectible cards. If you have a collection you just found in the attic, bring it to Jimmy's Cards and Collectibles and let them make you an offer. Anderson's only source for cards and collectibles. Jimmy's Cards and Collectibles, next to Mama Penn's, Anderson. Monday through Saturday, 11 to 7, Sundays by appointment.
Introducing your new Dell PC with the Intel Core Ultra Processor. It helps you handle a lot, even when your holiday to-do list gets to be a lot. Like organizing your holiday shopping and searching for great holiday deals and customer questions and customers requesting custom things, plus planning the perfect holiday dinner for vegans, vegetarians, pescatarians, and Uncle Mike's carnivore diet. Luckily, you can get a PC with all-day battery life to help you get it all done. That's the power of a Dell PC with Intel inside, backed by Dell's Price Match Guarantee. Get yours today at Dell.com/deals. Terms and conditions apply. See Dell.com for details.
Powered by Upcountry Fiber, we are 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Providing fiber internet, HDTV, and phone service, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
With all the changes going on in college athletics, you need someone who can keep you up to speed. And that's where we come in.
How do you think it went? I got him on the 1 yard line.
English, please. You know, I don't know baseball.
We are The Roar. Where every day is game day.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Height continues. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. Texter gets in and says, why can't the QBs throw higher to Ian Scheflin? I don't know. That's two times where I think... I'll say this on Chef. Okay, number one, the jet touch pass was like the funniest play call of the season. Like, I know there's a lot of people complaining about that. I would say look at the scoreboard and take a giant step back and find the comical value that the power forward for Clemson men's basketball was coming in motion and got a jet sweep. If your takeaway from that is anything other than comedy, you have the wrong perspective and you need to share a laugh.
I have two things to say about that. Both were points that were made by Tim Beret during the broadcast. One, I thought his play in the end zone was better at Georgia Tech than it was here in this. I prefer him boxing somebody out than trying to go up over somebody. But two, he is the only athlete at Clemson University history to have won a football game in Chapel Hill and won a basketball game in Chapel Hill as a player. So you mean to tell you didn't think that there wasn't going to be something drawn up for Ian Shefflin in this game if the scoreboard allowed for it? Come on now. Come on now.
Definitely.
I mean, not surprised whatsoever that that was the play call, the look for him. I mean, you knew this was going to be the spot for it in Chapel Hill. Absolutely.
Yes, that is definitely for certain. I'll say this last thing before we get Skip in here on the phone lines as well, just kind of on the Shefflin stuff. You're never going to see him unless it's those type of situations.
Correct.
Right? Like, this isn't something that's, like, noteworthy. You have three tight ends that all play consistently in front of him. There's been zero deviation from that, and he's not taking meaningful snaps from everyone.
Right.
So I feel like when people complain, like, that should complain about the football team being 2-3. Complain about the lack of a run game. Complain about the O-line. Complain about Cade. Don't complain about Ian Shefflin getting garbage time snaps, because in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter.
Then I need you to come with the same energy of why is Cole Sanderson out here catching passes.
Hey.
Right. Like, if you're going to get in about, like, why are we doing this stuff with Ian Shefflin in the second half of a game that's already in doubt, then I need the same energy with Cole Sanderson.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
So I just, it's like, you did not do it when you were trying to put up a go-ahead score against LSU in the first game of the season and drop everything for Ian Shefflin. Like,
I can't believe they brought him in motion. That was still the funniest part of the game.
Right. And I think that's probably the last time you're going to see him in motion doing that, because you have three other tight ends who can do that much better.
Yes.
I probably think you have four or five that maybe do it better than that.
Let's go to Skip on the phone line. 654-ROAR is the number. Good to hear from you, Skip. Thanks for checking in, brother.
Hey, thanks for getting me in.
Talk to me a little bit about this last weekend, Skip. What were your main takeaways in the world of football?
My main takeaways, and this kind of addresses some of the things that you brought up earlier, I agree with you that Cade is a different quarterback when he's given time, but what I saw across the board this weekend in college ball was that the offensive lines across the country are struggling in comparison to years past.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a combination of things for a myriad of different reasons. I think one of those is you're seeing more athletic, fast front sevens, particularly on the defensive line across the board in college ball. And then, you know, maybe not necessarily in Clemson's case, but I think that it's also an issue of the portal, where I think offensive line, being a former lineman myself, I think that that's a position in particular, or a position group, that really needs to marinate a little bit more so than others. I mean, you're seeing some freshmen start across the board, but outside of this year, it was kind of an outlier. You had a freak guy that would go out there and start as a freshman on the line, especially at the big T4 level. But offensive lines are struggling across the board. I haven't seen a dominant unit. I mean, there's some that are obviously better than others. But in comparison to years past, when you've had some dominant Georgia offensive lines, or Michigan, Wisconsin, Alabama, you're just not seeing it as you have in years past. And while I watched a lot of football this weekend, I was thankful for the noon kick. It allowed me to watch more ball. But that is one thing that really stood out to me, and has stood out to me throughout the season, is you're not seeing guys round into form midway through that you have in the past.
Yeah, I think there's exactly – I think you're 100% right, Skip. And I also think that there's one offensive line in the country that I've taken away and think is leaps and bounds better than everybody else, and that's Miami. Everybody else has issues. Like, Miami is the only team that I see consistently giving their quarterback all day back there. And as a result, like, I know you're a Georgia guy. Beck's ripping it right now. That's no surprise to you, because we know when that guy's clean, things go great. The issue is when you get him off structure and you get him off his platform, because he's not very mobile. But, you know, outside of Miami, I wholeheartedly agree with you. I think that's the best offensive line in the country by far and away. And everybody else has had some big-time struggles, including Florida State, who's got a really good unit on paper that really dominated Alabama. They gave up 42 hurries. Thomas Castellanos was literally running for his life.
I agree. I think Miami has an elite unit. And we've seen that when Carson Beck has time and he's single. He can dissect defenses. But, you know, at the same time, outside of that, you're not really seeing it. And I expect Cristobal to have that type of unit. He's kind of built for this. And he, as much crap as we, you and I both have given him, I do think he's a good offensive line coach.
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't have been the guy in Tuscaloosa had he not been. But, yeah, they look great. And I think they'll, barring injury, I think they'll continue to be great and get even better as the year goes on. It is interesting that Carson Beck's numbers this year are very similar to what his numbers were last year in Athens, and I think he may have even thrown for a few more yards at this point last year when he was in Athens. But he has looked good. He's looked very good. He has some good weapons. I am impressed with how he's playing. I'm not a bitter, angry Georgia fan. Even though I was upset with him a few times last year, I am happy for him. I think he made the right choice.
Yeah, I think you made the right choice as well, and I think that's a win-win situation, Skip. You get a little bit more moxie, you get a little bit more leadership, and you get a little bit more mobility with Gunnar Stockton at quarterback, and I still think your Georgia team's in really good hands with Gunnar. And then for Miami, with the way that they're able to protect the pocket and be a run-centric offense and utilize play action, they've got their guy in Carson Beck. So there are a lot of lose-loses in the transfer portal. This, from the start for me, has always been a win-win for both Miami and Georgia. I think both schools upgraded, and both schools are in a really good spot as of right now.
I agree. I think everything's in front of both teams. And I think, you know, I could make an argument that Miami's the number one team in the country given what we've seen thus far. You know, similar to what we were saying about the offensive line, I don't know that you have a completely just dominant leaps and bounds better team than anyone else. I mean, I think you could make the argument for Miami, possibly Ohio State, that they've kind of separated themselves from the field. But again, comparing those teams to, you know, like a 19 LSU, an 18 or a 16 Clemson, or a 2021, 22 Georgia team, 15 Bama. These teams just don't seem quite as dominant, and I think it's a residual effect of what we're seeing in the portal and in the NIL era, and it's created more parity across the board.
Yeah, definitely in full agreement there, and I think it's the depth thing, right, which is the what really used to overwhelm people in the past is when your twos would come in and there would be very marginal drop-off, as we've seen in at Clemson specifically the last couple of years, and I'm sure you can share some of those sentiments as Georgia as well. The backups just aren't as anywhere near as good anymore, and the twos just aren't anywhere near as good anymore. That's my main takeaway.
Well, that's the thing. You know, some of those national championship years at Clemson and, you know, at Georgia – and at Alabama, that, you know, the old saying was, well, they're just going to replace their five-star starter with a five-star backup. And now your backups are hopefully high three-star guys.
Yes, and that's the hope, is that you can develop your depth, and that's where player development is more important than anywhere else, in my opinion, nowadays, Skip, is what are your twos getting on a weekly basis? When somebody goes down, do you have somebody on your depth chart that can be thrust into that starting role and ready to guard one of the best players in the country at their respective positions? The teams that have that, like your Ohio States and your Notre Dames, they're going to continue to go far in the college football playoff, and I do think for a large part of Georgia's case, like that can be applied to UGA as well. There's a handful of programs who have still done a pretty good job developing depth.
I think that was what was so important to see Georgia start fast against Kentucky on Saturday. And I know that Kentucky is down. They're a very physical team, as they always are, but they're down compared to years past. And I think that's what was important for Georgia, to start fast, get up early, assert your dominance. And then, you know, most of the starters were pulled out in Athens late in the third quarter. So you had second and third guys that played the remainder of the game getting valuable in-game reps that you can't get in practice, no matter how talented the player that lines up across from them. Just being able to get out there and get game time in a conference game was really invaluable, I think, for a lot of the depth pieces at Georgia.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. Well, Skip, thanks for checking into the program this morning, brother. Always a pleasure to catch up, and best of luck to your Dogs going forward. I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you all. Have a great day.
Thank you, Skip. 654 Roar is the number if you want to check in. And, John, we've done a ton of Clemson breakdowns. It's probably time of the program here at about the midway point to start branching out into the remainder of the world of college football. I know you guys were glued to the television just like I was this weekend. 654 Roar for your commentary, your breakdowns, and more on the other games in the world of college football. And, John, I'll give you dibs and priority here of where you'd like to start, because we could talk about the state of Florida. We could talk about what happened out west. We could talk about the Gators. I wasn't even mentioning that in the first game with the state of Florida. We could also talk the Pavia Chronicles with Johnny Football on the sidelines making obscene gestures at fans. There was a lot to just indulge this past weekend and try and process throughout the course of 2 days. Where do you want to start?
I want to start with one of the worst losses I think we've ever seen in college football history.
Yes, let's do it.
Penn State 37, UCLA 42. Coming into this game, not only was UCLA winless, they had literally not led in any of their games all season long. Let me reemphasize that. An 0-4 UCLA team who lost at home to New Mexico that fired their head coach. They have fired the offensive coordinator, gave it to Jerry Neuhausel last week with like 48 hours to come up with a game plan. Their new defensive coordinator was coaching at Syracuse 2 weeks ago.
What?
Kevin Coyle was an assistant at Syracuse 2 weeks ago. He is now here as the interim DC for UCLA. And they pull off the upset. Nico had five touchdowns going into this game. He scored five touchdowns alone in this game. Like, I know you had to travel. But my goodness, is that... I'm having a tough time coming to words at how much of a letdown loss this is. We've heard the expression, and we use this expression a lot around here, when Clemson was dominating teams, where you can't let the Clemson game beat you twice. The Oregon game beat Penn State twice. James Franklin was laying that out in the midweek press conference this week. And man, you just thought that getting on a cross-country flight and you'd just be able to show up, get a good workout in, and then head back and continue on course. What a slap in the face to preparation. I mean, and honestly, it's to the same level that Clemson showed against Troy, right, where the LSU game beat them twice. But they woke up and found a way to win the game. Like, you were down 27-7 at half to a team that couldn't put up points against Northwestern. A team that couldn't compete with Northwestern.
They put up 10 on New Mexico 2 weeks prior. They came off the bye. They went to Northwestern. They put up 14. They lost both of those games.
Yes.
And then they beat Penn State 42-37.
Interim coach Tim Skipper at UCLA now has many career top 10 wins as James Franklin does.
Yes.
As James Franklin. Like, I know we are very down about from what the preseason projections were here in Tigertown to what we have seen thus far. There's not a bigger disappointment in the sport than Penn State and James Franklin right now.
The more I look at this UCLA team and the data from this season, the more unfathomable it becomes. Let's remove the UNLV game just for a fun exercise here. Okay?
All right.
We're going to go Utah, New Mexico, and Northwestern. In those three games, UCLA scored a combined 34 points. They in 12 entire quarters of football against Utah, a large part of that was garbage time against Utah's twos. Against New Mexico, a large part of that was in garbage time against New Mexico's twos because they were up 35-10 at UCLA. New Mexico walked into your trap and beat you 35-10. 35-10, man. And Penn State goes on the road and gives up 42 points to an interim coach, to Nico Iamalieva, who was the best player on the field by a landslide.
By far,
and
it wasn't even close.
For the first time in his career in a game.
It wasn't even close. I thought, like, Andy Kotelnicki, horrible, horrible calling of a game by an offensive coordinator.
It was bad, yeah.
I mean, when they got the ball with like 2 minutes left, they're running the ball and they're milking the clock and they're slowly getting to the line. And it's, you know, we give James Franklin a lot of crap because he can't win the big game. And it's true, he can't do it. But to give the man credit, he's never lost the game he's not supposed to.
Nope.
But now that this is that you have this type of a blemish, because now you've back-to-back losses. And you have a loss to, without a doubt, the worst team in Power Conference football. They've played Northwestern. Northwestern whooped. Like, this is bad. Like, this should be the type of loss. Yes, we've expanded the field. Like, Penn State's argument should have, it needs to be like a chart. It gets done. It's done. And I guess mathematically they can win out. They could beat Ohio. They're not going to. You know, like mathematically they still have some big games left on their schedule. Nah, man. That you overhauled the receiver room and you still didn't get anything to show for it. Another year, Drew Aller, and I don't think he's gotten any better. A absolute humiliating performance by Penn State that will go down in history.
One of the biggest failures in the history of college football transpired on Saturday out against UCLA for Penn State. And yeah, I really worried about them short and long term. It'll be interesting to see how they try and bounce back from that, because
this may be the greatest challenge of James Franklin's coaching career, is getting this team up off the mat.
Yeah, I do agree with that. Texter gets in and says, facts, and I think Franklin should move on from Penn State and head somewhere else. What do you think? Where should he go? I'm not 100% positive. I don't know if that conversation is worth having at this juncture. But a lot of teams and programs would hire James Franklin. I will say that. Like, undeniably, he's done a good job in totality at Penn State. He has raised the floor. But with those floor-raising type of coaches, there does become a crossroads, and that's where administration has to make a decision. So we'll unpack a little bit more about that on the other side of a quick break. 654-ROAR is the number if you want to check in.
I'm Eddie Bennett. For 25 years, Bennett Equipment has sold and managed construction equipment. Bennett is one of Takeuchi's top dealers in the U.S. for the last 2 years by putting our customers first. And now Takeuchi is offering 0% financing on all equipment and attachments, along with an industry-leading 3-year, 3,000-hour warranty. As we celebrate 25 and 25, we want to thank our loyal customers for your business and trust. And as always, when you need equipment, buy it or rent it from Bennett.
When friends and family are coming over to your place for the next big game, everything has to be right. So when your comfort and reputation are on the line, don't leave it to chance. Bring in the experts in the bold, white, and blue trucks. Visit acehomeco.com for all your plumbing, HVAC, and electrical needs.
Straight Up Sports is simply all sports all the time. Straight Up Sports is a collection of retired and award-winning sports writers and sports broadcasters from around South Carolina. Like Bob Gillespie from the State Newspaper, Scott Kiefer from the Greenville News, and Mark Sturgis from ESPN Upstate. Straight Up Sports is about the stories, just like the days gone by, with no editors nor managers involved. Check us out on Facebook or Twitter or online at straightupsports.net.
Carolina legends aren't born. They're handmade in Bo's Real Southern Kitchen. We marinate our chicken for 24 hours in a blend of bold Southern seasonings. Then we hand bread and fry it to crispy, juicy perfection. And that's why they call us the Carolina legend. It's Bo time.
This is where it starts. Where your story begins. This is the trail you blaze yourself. And step by step, you get stronger, faster, better. This is where it starts. How do you finish? Ingles, we're with you every step of the way.
Hey Clemson family, I'm Jeff Scott, former assistant coach and proud member of two national championship teams. Success on the football field takes teamwork, vision, and a great game plan. I partnered with fellow Clemson alum Eric Newton to create Newton Scott & Associates. Tigertown to Lake Kiwi, we're your championship team, here to help you buy, sell, or build. When it's time to make your next move, trust the winning team, Newton Scott & Associates. Real estate, the Clemson way. Visit us at newtonscottsc.com.
Contractors, we know what it takes to build something great. Long days, hard work, and the right materials. At Harbin Lumber Company, we're here to make sure you've got everything you need to get the job done. Since 1917, we've been your trusted partner in building dreams, from framing lumber to finished materials. When you work with Harbin, you're not just getting quality supplies, you're getting a team that's got your back. Visit one of our local lumber yards today and let's build dreams together.
East Main Furniture in Easley, where every day is a sale day. Come find deals on living room, bedroom, dining room, lamps, rugs, mattresses, and occasional furniture. Brand names like Lazy Boy, England, Best, Ashley, Catnapper, Liberty Furniture, and Vaughn Bassett, all at discounted prices. If we don't stock it, we can special order it for you. With 90 days same as cash on purchases over $300, we make it easy. East Main Furniture, located at 829 East Main Street, Easley, or call 864-4426-054 today.
Ready to hit the trail? Start with protection that's as tough as the terrain. Rhino Linings of Greenville, now at Odyssey Vehicle Outfitters in Simpsonville.
Spray-on bed liners, rock solid durability. And while you're here, gear up with lift kits, wheels, lighting, racks, and more.
From overland rigs to weekend warriors, Odyssey has the gear and the know-how to outfit your ride right.
Rhino tough, trail ready, all under one roof.
Visit OdysseyVehicleOutfitters.com
and get Rhino tough today.
The only place for sports talk in the upstate is right here, every day. We are the Roar, where every day is game day.
Facts on Sports with Fax and Childress and John Height continues right here on 105.5 97.5 The Roar. 654 Roar is the number. Quick thing on Clemson football before we get John Ellison here, because I accidentally lied to a texter and said I would get to something that I forgot to wrap back to. But they wanted to talk about the play on fourth down where they faked the pooch punt and dropped back into the pooch punt formation and then rolled Cade out to the right. I thought that was brilliant. I thought that was one of the best play calls of the season from Garrett Riley. So appreciate you getting in, texter 279. That's my bad. It just slipped my mind. But definitely a great play call there, and really love to see that from Coach Riley for sure. All right, let's get John Ellis in here on the phone lines. Really excited to have John joining the program today. You guys can check out John over on Twitter at One Panther Place. And John, really excited to have you in on the program today. I know you do a lot of great work with the Panthers, you know, doing a lot of NFL analysis, Fox Sports Upstate, all that good stuff. Thanks for hopping on the program, brother. We're glad to have you.
Facts, what's going on, man? It's a pleasure. This will be fun.
This will be fun, man. And was excited to hop on your program last week. Glad we can kind of exchange the favors here and have you on today. So let's hop right into it. I know you're a big Panthers guy. We're going to talk a little college football. We're going to talk a little NFL. But I'll start you out with you got to be really excited about your boys yesterday. 17-point comeback from behind. I want to say I heard Canales say in the postgame speech that that's tied for the longest in team history. Big win for your Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, you know, it's a big win for the fans. They have been thirsting for this kind of win for a long time, Facts. And you look at the recent history of Carolina, it's no secret that there have been more questions than answers when it comes to defensively stopping the run, offensively the passing attack. I would say this, you know, you're right about what Canales said. It was the largest comeback, tied to the largest comeback in franchise history. 2018 against, hate to say it, Facts, the Eagles.
I remember that one.
Back in Philly. And it happened a couple times prior, too, back in 2004 when John Fox was here at San Francisco, and, of course, 2003. And it felt a lot like this game, 2003 home opener against Jacksonville. Jake DeLome's first action as an NFL quarterback comes in and rallies them back. It took everybody, but the storyline, obviously, is Rico Dowdle, who grew up in Gaffney. Then came by way of Asheville and, of course, was a South Carolina Gamecock. Had some great moments with the Dallas Cowboys, but never like this. He had never exceeded more than, I think, 40 yards in terms of a career-long carry. And then he's just out there in open space as they continue to chip away to the tune of 200-plus yards, tied for the second highest total by a running back in regular season history for this team. It was remarkable to see, and it was the way in which they did it. Carolina had no answers in the first couple of quarters. And usually, it's one thing I kept telling Panthers fans, what I would hope for them at some point, the fans that is baby steps. Like, you can get to halftime in a game and not want to turn the thing off. When they rallied in the second quarter, got back into it, you had some feeling that, okay, things could settle in. It was a great performance. Hats off to everybody, especially the defense, that held that Miami running game to less than 2 yards per carry. That was really, among other things, the key to the win. If you take away their running game, Mike McDaniel's offense, it's really hard for Tua to elevate everybody else.
Yeah, it truly is. And that Dolphins team just got gashed on the ground consistently throughout the course of this game. But if there was one area of the game for the defense that I thought Carolina did a really good job with, slowing down Akane in that run game is no easy task against a team like the Dolphins and a play caller like McDaniel. I know that Tua Tagovailoa did have some success through the air, but the defense in the second half specifically, John, one chunk play to Waddle was really all they gave up. They were locked down and really turned it into a different gear after halftime.
Yeah, that really was the story, Fax. You know, the running game for Carolina really allowed the defense to get together, get their win back, rest a little bit, and try to determine how to best course correct what was happening in the first half. And you look at the drives. The first two drives for Miami, they combined for 25 plays. And you're thinking, oh, boy, this is the scripted part of the game for Mike McDaniel. This is about how it's going to look. It could be a long day. Now they're off 17-0. The last eight drives for Miami, they did not exceed five plays in a single drive. So with the exception, like you said, of Waddle, and that was a great call by McDaniel to run a fake wide zone, little ball action, and then over the top with single high safety, that was it. And so that was all the more remarkable for this defense. But when you continue to stop the run, as you said, Devon Achane, one of the fastest running backs in the NFL, and they use him in diabolical ways in the running game, Carolina just read their keys, took that away first, and it made things harder for everything else to operate. And I think, you know, it's hats off to this defense. It's been under fire, but they're really starting to come together in terms of stopping the run, and that's impressive.
Yeah, definitely very impressive stuff as we continue to visit with John Ellis, talking some NFL, and going to shift gears to some college football here. Stay in the state of North Carolina. What were your main takeaways from the Clemson matchup against the Tar Heels this past weekend? Obviously, a pretty lackluster North Carolina team, but Clemson seeing one go through the hoop seems huge for this group.
Yeah, you know, good win for Clemson, and this is why, you know, the season is long, and this has been an unusual start for Dabo Swinney. Obviously, you know that firsthand, facts for covering this team on the tailgate and much, much more. It's been an unusual, you know, September. It was an unusual September, you know, getting to 1-3, your lone win, obviously, against Troy, and that was a dogfight, the lightning delays, all the chaotic things that have happened so far. But it was a great stabilizing win for Clemson. That's how they should look with their talent level against teams like North Carolina that are really, let's just face it, with Bill Belichick and all that's going on up there, it's going to take a while, if he's going to stay there for a while, to figure out how to be competitive within the structure of even an ACC conference. But I thought Klubnik looked great. You know, the double pass coming right out of the gate there, that was just a sign of a team that's got supreme confidence coming into that game in terms of the talent gap. I thought it was good to see Tom Allen back on the sideline. That was a nice wrinkle. His energy is second to none, and I think getting him on the field, getting command of guys in terms of, you know, just assignments and alignment and all that, I thought that was a good move. Defensively, they were much better. That's about how they should look against a team like North Carolina, and I thought it was impressive to go up there and take care of business and get everybody the ball, including Adam Randall, who's just such a good weapon because, boy, you know, in fact, he's really coming to his own as a pure runner inside. But then when they flare him out in the passing game, he's a natural because he's a receiver.
Yeah, and that's a big addition to this offense and a bolster to this offense that, John, to be candid, I'm hoping is utilized more frequently throughout the course of the season. I feel like there's a lot of ways that Garrett Riley can become creative and give some unique looks to prioritize Randall in the passing game. Are you anticipating that to be something that's more frequently featured in the Clemson offense as the season progresses?
I would hope so. Yeah, you would like to see more of that throughout the course of this season. It's a dynamic shift to a certain degree between what they've had, you know, in the past, where and most recently you could rely on Maffa, Shipley, that 1-2 punch in terms of styles. But this is a much more unique weapon in terms of Randall because he is 6'2", he is 220. He's built a little bit like Derrick Henry in that regard, but he has the pure ball skills as a receiver, the route running, the ability to tightrope the sidelines. He's a fascinating player, and I think that's one of the things among many that, you know, you have to consider as a Clemson fan. No one likes being 1-3, now 2-3 feels a lot better. But when you're starting out the way you are, you're trying to figure out all these new pieces. And, you know, we talk about the defense with Tom Allen. That was always going to be an adjustment, and I think they're on their way now. But, you know, this piece with Adam Randall in the backfield, how to best utilize him, it's at times to me felt clunky even though the production was there, and I think they're getting into a better rhythm now.
Yeah, it feels like that rhythm is being established as we continue to visit with John Ellis. Got about 4 more minutes here with him before a top of the hour break. John, I want to pivot back to the NFL if you're cool with that. It was a rough weekend for my Eagles, which unfortunately was very predictable because I don't think this is a very good football team right now. But what were some of your main takeaways from the NFL world outside of the Carolina Panthers this past weekend?
Well, it started in Philly. I think that's, I picked Denver in this game in our pick'ems on our show last week, and no disrespect to Philly, they got a tremendous roster. I think there are some things going on with Kevin Petullo, the OC, that concern me a little bit if I'm a Philly fan, and it's the lack of dynamic routes. They've got, as people have said, smarter than you and I, they seem to have about 10 or 12 plays in their playbook when it comes to the passing game, and they don't have a lot of diversification of routes. So it's just, a lot of things look very similar week to week on tape. But hats off to, Sean Payton and that Denver defense. They came in, did what they had to do. I thought that was impressive. I think Prescott's playing about as well as any player in the league right now for the Cowboys. Buyer beware on that because the Jets are next level horrible in terms of defense. It's just going to be a rough road for this team. Go all the way back to Thursday night. What a win for the 49ers. I mean, that's, to me, to have your roster gutted like they have in terms of injuries. You're rolling out all sorts of new players, including Mac Jones, who was left for dead in terms of his future with this league. They get a big win, and that was certainly huge. And then, look at, Carson Wentz. You get these stories that you feel good about, guys having that second chance coming back. He looked well. Spencer Rattler looked good. Jackson Dart, not so much. And then the Colts. I mean, let's just go ahead and face it. After about 2 weeks, I was thinking, is this another round of what the Saints did last year? No, they're for real. 40-6 win yesterday. Danny Dimes looking good. Defense looking great. A lot of good games. And the Bengals, oh, my gosh. I don't know what the answer is, but just for the sake of sanity for these receivers, they might have to go trade for a quarterback. I'm not saying that'll make them playoff ready, but this is next-level bad without Burrow right now.
Yeah, it is next-level bad without Joe Burrow right now, and that's been my primary takeaway. The offensive line, I got to give credit to Joe Burrow, actually. I think my opinion of him has raised significantly this season, and I already think he's a really good player. I'm starting to believe he's just a borderline miracle worker, because how is he putting up those numbers with this efficiency behind an offensive line? I tend to not even think that Browning's a bad backup. I think with a little bit better structure around him, like we saw last year, he can be a decent little player. But how does Burrow continue to put up numbers even with one of the worst situations in the NFL up front?
I think he's underrated, facts, in terms of his pocket movement, the ability to get out of a phone booth in small spaces when things are in trouble. He's so elite there. And his ball placement, his anticipation, his timing and rhythm with Higgins and Chase and Yoshivash and all of it, Gesicki, everybody on that roster is just next level. It's the little things that you can't necessarily see on tape that we can't diagnose that are just there within that brain of his. I'll say one more thing about last night. What a game that was for Drake May. I mean, that's, you don't want to say it's a passing of the torch, but it feels like New England might be a little bit back here with a big win last week, 40-plus points against Carolina, and then they go on the road to a place where nobody really wins anymore, Highmark Stadium, and they leave their mark against a very good Buffalo team. And that could be one of those coming-of-age moments for Drake May. That was something special.
Well, John, we got to let you run up here against the top of the hour break, but where can our audience check out your content with the Carolina Panthers? And thanks again for coming on the program, brother. You did a great job.
Yeah, no problem, man. We do the pregame show for 99.7 The Fox up in Charlotte, the flagship, every Sunday. And, of course, we've got a lot of things going on Twitter at One Panther Place. You can catch all my content there. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, appreciate you, John, and excited to tag team a couple more segments in the future on each of our respective shows. Take care, brother, and we'll chat later this afternoon if that sounds good with you.
Let's do it, Pax.
Absolutely. Thank you, John.
Thanks, man.
John Ellis at One Panther Place on Twitter. If you're a Panthers fan, you probably are living under a rock if you don't follow John. Does a great job with all of their Panthers-related coverage. All right, going to take a quick top-of-the-hour break here on the program. And on the other side, we're going to be branching out into some more general college football and NFL talk. It was a great weekend of NFL football. It was a good weekend of college football. We still got to talk about all of the SEC matchups that turned heads. We have gotten 2 hours into the program, and we have not mentioned those Florida Gators. Shout out to Sunbelt Billy, man. There's nobody I'd rather have in the country with their job on the line than Billy Napier with his back against the wall. What a coach when he's on the hot seat. Quick break here on the program. Coming back to some Texas-Florida talk with Faxon and John right after this.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson. WAHT-AM 1560, Cowpens. 97.